everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon, going to be with you for about 55 minutes today. Again, this is Pittsfield Public School Week, and we're opening. We are Pittsfield Community Radio. We are Pittsfield Community Television, and Pittsfield Public Schools are such an integral part of our community. And we're going to open the window a little bit and let you see and talk to the people who help our kiddos get through and learn. I'm very proud to say that I am a graduate of Pittsfield High School. I don't know if they are, but I am. And listen, I graduated so long ago, Aristotle was in my class, so it doesn't make any difference. Today we were honored, and really, I really am honored and privileged to have with me Bethany Nichols. Bethany, tell us your official title.
Sure. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I am also a graduate of Pittsfield High School.
See that?
There we go.
We got somebody to be proud of this morning.
Sure. My official title is the Director of Social Emotional Learning and Student Support.
And that really, give us an overview of that.
Sure. Yeah. So it encompasses a lot of different things. My unit, my group, is the school adjustment counselors and school psychologists. So I work with that group in any of their planning and their work. I also work at the district level, driving our social-emotional learning curriculum, our screenings and surveys. I am the 504 coordinator for the district, so supporting students with disabilities, and then any district level work related to budgeting and planning, in that sense.
That to me is today is a very integral part of what goes on in schools. My background, I ran the Violent Youthful Offender Program, 14 to 21, for very violent crimes. They were sentenced to the penitentiary. And what I learned from, I didn't call it back then what you're calling it, social and emotional learning, but what I learned from them, being right in the cell block with them, you got your hands full. As a career, as educators, and because so many of them, when they were in school, they had issues, but they were issues they brought from home. Some of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I see the curriculums definitely did not exist when I was younger. And I think it stems from an equity issue as well.
Exactly.
So we have students come to school and we have, you know, expectations around behavior and how they interact. But if we're not teaching them what we are expecting, that's, you know, we can't expect everyone to come with the same skills.
And, you know, that, again, we go back to today's day and age. I had older brothers and sisters, so they, how do I want to say it? I don't want to say, we were groomed, there was an expectation of how to behave in school that we learned from our older brothers and sister and sisters and parents. You know, you didn't want a call from the school to home. Unless it was to say you did a good job. So do you see that, too? The kids aren't really getting prepared to go to school?
I mean, I think it depends on some of their early education that they've had as well. If we're talking the younger students,
right,
have attended preschool or daycare. For some of our students, coming to school is their first time in an educational setting. And it's not that there's anything necessarily wrong with that. The district has done a lot of work on bringing more pre-K classes to us, but they might just not know what the expectations are. They're still learning how to, you know, get in line and move through the hallways. And, you know, some of their peers might have been doing that for 2 or 3 years. So some of it's, you know, catching everyone up to speed on sort of what we're expecting in school. We do have some students who, you know, may come from experiences where, you know, the skills may not have been modeled for them.
Right.
They may experienced that or seen, what those expectations might be.
And right now, how do you implement kind of like a 30,000 foot interview, that's what we're doing, overview. Boy, is that Monday? I can tell. But how do you approach that? I mean, but what I want the people to understand is the intricacies of everything involved with today's education. Not when I was in school, not when you were in school, but today's education. And that's kind of the purpose of opening the window to all that the Pittsfield school system does. And let me just make one more comment and you can respond. Pittsfield, and here's the operative word, public school system. Whoever shows up at the door, they have to work with, by law, certain age groups. So other than that, go ahead, Bethany, please.
Sure. Yeah. We welcome all students that come to us. So when we talk about social emotional learning, there's really several different ways that can happen. There are actual research-based curriculums. Yep. Pittsfield, we use a program called Second Step, and that is
right here. Here's my homework.
Pre-K through 8, we have Second Step. We've had the pre-K through 5 for many years, and then the middle school curriculum we've had that for 2 years, I believe.
Oh, okay.
We're still looking for a good high school curriculum. I think there's the understanding that people are looking for that, so the companies are starting to roll out with those, but we haven't yet gone there yet. So that's when we talk about a social emotional learning curriculum, that's a series of lessons. Our version is digital, so it's led by a teacher, but sure, he would pull up the lesson on the screen and engage with students with short videos and discussion questions and things like that. And there's a scope and sequence. There's certain skills that they're working on, and then as okay. the students through the years, the skills that they're learning become more complex, more developmentally appropriate for where they are. So this is sort of like that direct teaching of language and different skills and things like that. But we also know that the carryover is really important. And something that the Pittsfield Public Schools is really strong in is something called positive behavior interventions and supports. My predecessor, Anne-Marie Carpenter, worked very hard to set up a strong program when PBIS first came about. Like, this is, over 20 years ago. And what that is setting up a school culture of having common expectations, setting, agreed procedures and different rules and way things will be done, but then really working to reinforce the students when they are having positive behavior. So not necessarily punishing poor behavior, but really getting ahead of it and saying, okay, it's the first day of school. Here's how we work in the cafeteria. Here's where we line up. Here's where we go. Here's how you do things. And then catching students being good and doing those skills. So really, setting the students up for success by teaching them what we want them to know, while then also, rewarding. Parents out there may hear their kids, they get tickets and chips and B-bucks and things like that. Wow. And then the students can turn those in for various tangible and non-tangible rewards.
Yeah, and what you just said is so true. I mean, we've heard it always. I mean, I heard it back when I was in college. I minored in education, and I did my student teaching. I'm very proud of that, Lanesboro Elementary. But we always heard reward positive behavior. But I don't – this is just me, not you – this is my opinion, and of course, the views and opinions expressed on this program are mine, those of my guests. They in no way represent, I don't know if we can say that, Pittsfield School Committee, School Department, Mayor Marchetti and the Mayor's Office, P. White and the City Council, and or the four or five people trying to ride their bicycle on William Street this morning. I'm just going back in my own memory bank. And that is, I think sometimes we were quick to react to the negative rather than reinforce the positive. That's just me.
Right. Well, it takes some planning. You have to get ahead of it,
Right.
which it's always hard to pre-plan. And I mean, it's
Yeah.
always our ideal way that we function, but people are busy. It takes some serious planning to make sure that you have everything in set. And so in our schools, every school has a PBIS team that works on these procedures and practices in their school. The teams get together twice a year to do their yearly planning. And then once a month, the facilitators of those teams also all get together to share ideas. There's usually a topic or a theme that we talk about. Whether that's bullying or student voice, different things like that.
I want to interrupt. This is Bethany Nichols, and her job is social and emotional learning. I think to again go back, not to repeat myself, but when you get to be my age, you can repeat yourself too. In that we're showing the Pittsfield school systems and encompassing all that goes in to school, to education, it and to kind of bring the public up to speed on today's educational successes, demands, changes. It's not like when I went to school because they don't have blackboards and chalk anymore. So there, that's one of the major changes. I got out of Catholic school by clapping the erasers at the end of the day. What do you? Let's do COVID. I've read, even preparing for these interviews, COVID is like a monster that just continues to hang over education and kids and adults even. Oh, and how has it affected, especially you guys and your approach to education?
Yeah, I mean, I think COVID really it interrupted our routines, and we know kids thrive on routines. They thrive on predictability, knowing what's expected, and COVID really disrupted that. I think for the older students, socially, school is, that's where they go to see their friends. That's where they
Yeah.
look forward to lunch and talking. So I think that, really disrupted, who they can see, students who may not have a cell phone or, just
Yeah.
that connections that they had, it was really, really disrupted by COVID. And then for the little ones, I mean, our students now who are in second and third grade, they were pre-K kindergarten when schools closed. So they missed that early socialization, like we talked about earlier, learning those
Yeah.
routines and those, how we go to school. They didn't necessarily have that. And I think umbrelling over a lot of this was just sort of a real feeling of anxiety for adults, for kids. People didn't know what was going on, what was happening, based on various medical conditions family members might have. I think there was just sort of a pervasive underlying anxiety too, with the kids and the adults over
Yeah.
necessarily knowing what was going on.
And all the I'm sure you've read the stuff. Some kids are 2 years, other kids are 4 years behind. Will they ever catch up? I'm not a predictor of the future. But call a lot of things never Nostradamus. So but one of the What's your gut? You're there. You're on the front line. No, I and I think that and an aside for me, this is just me. Before people talk about the schools and education and the teachers and the administration, get the facts. Because I've had people call me to come on because they heard that they're not going to be buses anymore. Well, that did you call the superintendent? Did you call? So what I think my goal in get this information out is to let people understand. Again, I repeat myself, it's not your father's school anymore. I mean, it's a lot different. I don't ever remember a time like this in my lifetime, in the world even. So Kids' anxiety. I think back quickly. I'm probably thanks for not noticing. I'm a child of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And you made me just think of it when you said anxiety. We had a bunch of anxiety at that point in time. And we also used to practice the duck and cover.
Mm-hmm.
Get under your desk so that you just be one little glob. No, they didn't tell us that. What's your gut on all of this and the anxiety of kids? You have to work with it every day. You and all the teachers.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely more of a culture of talking about what's going on. I think students they have a lot more language to explain how they feel. I think there's definitely a greater acceptance of mental health support.
Oh, sure. Our
school adjustment counselors are so busy during the day with students seeking them out. They see them as a resource. When students are upset or have a concern, they're seeking our mental health supports in the schools.
That's great.
Yeah. So I think now we hear a lot more about it too, but it's also because it's more commonly accepted and people have the language to explain what's going on.
Yeah. And you know what I heard there too, they're approaching you. They're coming to you. I mean, that to me, that is so refreshing to see it. When this radio station was in the old Taconic, we broadcast from that closet studio that we had. And you really got a sense of the interaction between, I think of Joe Benjamin. I can never remember being there in the morning. Joe Benjamin wasn't in the hall.
Mm-hmm.
And same, even now with the new Taconic, Dr. Bishop and all the people that are there, you guys have built up a relationship, which I think is wonderful, with the students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's definitely, this is something we've worked on too in our new teacher orientation and bringing some of this training to the staff is we've been calling it positive personal relationships. And it's not, obviously, no one goes into teaching to not have a relationship with students, but it's sort of bringing the research behind some of that and the intentionality behind it. Like, sure, you stand at your door and you greet every student in the morning, but you learning their name and how to pronounce it is important, and here's why. So it brings a little more meat behind what the teachers are doing and making them feel like, okay, no, you're doing this, but you're also doing this. Because it's a research-based way to say, if a student has a greater sense of belonging at school, they want to be there, they're happier there, they're more motivated.
Yeah.
And how can we create that for everyone?
And don't you think, too, that what I've seen, even with my wife, and I do get a little ruffled under the feathers here when people don't understand between corrective discipline and the positiveness that brings to things. Like you, especially with the little kiddos, if they learn the routine early on, unfortunately with the COVID, some of them, like you said, first time in the school building was what, second, third, fourth grade?
Yeah, and that's, if you're not familiar with the code of conduct, character, and support that the Pittsfield Schools has, that's a document that outlines sort of all of our, prevention activities, the way that we, promote positive behavior. It includes our responses to any behavior that happens, but it also includes a section on how to restore relationships through restorative practice.
Yeah, and that's so kind of important if you want to get into it a little bit more, because to me, I want the public to understand, when they say, well, I'll just throw them out of school if they're troublemakers. Well, then they're troublemakers forever. I mean, my approach with kids, challenging kids, I certainly had them, was so they didn't do life on the installment. But we have to take... Some kiddos just don't understand the rules. That's what I found. Once the rules were explained and enforced consistently.
Right. And, you know, we don't know what students bring with them, too. Sometimes they're, you know, not having a good day and something happens. Yep. So in our code of conduct, there's really language about having a restorative and accountable approach to discipline. So what that means is that doesn't mean no one is, you know, getting any discipline for something that they do, but also that there's a restorative component to that. So if something happens with another student, with a staff member, that also, you know, there's work to have a restorative conversation following before the student is, you know, returned to the classroom so that they know that they're welcome back and sort of the air has been cleared. They may, you know, there could be a mediation or, you know, a discussion around how to change their behavior and get the students' input on sort of what's going on, what might they need. So bringing that restorative piece in addition to the accountable component.
And this isn't a slam at anybody. It really isn't. It's just an observation in my, again, me. It's some, you know, some kids' parents had, and I'm going right from a conversation I had with a youth. My parents didn't do well in school. I didn't do well in school. So, you know, what do you expect from me? And so sometimes there's preconceived seeds planted in a kid's head. I will tell you a personal story. My son many years ago got hit by a car and really damaged his left leg. We lived out in Leavenworth. And the doctors there, they're wonderful doctors, but they said, well, he'll probably walk with a pronounced limp and he'll probably not be able to play sports. And so I didn't want him to hear all that. So when we came home, our local, who's since retired, Dr. Michael Fabrizio, said, no, we're not going to plant seeds of can't. We're going to plant seeds of can. It, you know, my son played football, he wrestled, and he never really walked with a pronounced limp. So I guess the thing was planting seeds. Mm-hmm. And you guys are planting, from what I've read, everything I've read about this program, it's restorative, and I hate to use the term because it's in some places it has a bad connotation, but it's a restorative justice, and I add true education.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, there are families that come with experiences that were not as positive when they were in school. And sometimes that can be, you know, working hard with a family to make sure they're comfortable coming in for a meeting. Sometimes that's, you know, if
scary.
It wasn't positive for you and now you have to go in and talk about something hard with your child, it's, you
right. Know, oh, that's an excellent point. That is an excellent point, but it really, that, because you just made a whole scenario jump into my head. And believe me, there's not a lot of things jumping in this head money anymore. But please continue. That was, about that whole scenario. I had a bad experience. Now I got to come to school for my kid.
Right. And that's where that creating those positive relationships with the parents as well. I know, you know, encouraging staff to reach out to families to share something positive at the beginning of the year, so that if you do need to reach out with, you know, a concern to work with a family, it's not the first time they're hearing from you. I know I always appreciate that with my own children. You know, it makes you feel good to hear about something positive that they're doing. I will have to say, regarding COVID too, I think being able to have Zoom has helped us a lot. It is a much easier lift to jump on a Zoom if you're a parent.
Right, yes.
With work schedules, or if you're a little bit anxious, people might jump on but not have their camera on. So you're able, I think it's brought in some more families who might not participate to be able to make that step in.
Yeah, and it's not as intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think, if you've had a bad experience at PHS, I pull PHS, and you walk back up all those steps again to go back into that same rotunda, all of a sudden you have you know, flashbacks. But what I hope the audience is getting out of this, and I really mean this, is that this group of people in today's Pittsfield school system, they have a plan for everything. They are prepared, I'm going to say, for almost any situation. You know, in today's day and age, I don't care whether you're in school or work or on the street, you never know what's going to happen next. And what you've done too is you professionalized this. I think in the past, now they have curriculums for this. I have one right here. But the one thing they, if I may, and you're into this, I'm just a guy reading off a piece of paper. Classroom management and behavior for students and teachers. You deal with this every day. What I used to tell my staff in the Youthful Offender Program, you're their role models for some of them. And some of them never had a positive role model in their life, or especially. So, and I'm not saying that with the school system, but the teachers, I mean, I think back to some wonderful teachers, and they were role models and and they inspired kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we survey our students and ask sort of what do you want? How do you feel a sense of belonging? Many of their responses are, my teachers know me as a person. They know, what I like, what my sport is. And then they ask me about that on Monday, or, I've been in the school play and they say, I came to see that you did such a good job. The students want to be seen. They want to be heard and known as individual people. And I think our staff are so great at making those connections, through being coaches and class advisors and club advisors, as well as just sort of those check-ins throughout the day, for our students. So many of our staff are their person to go to. I don't have the exact data in front of me, but in a recent survey we asked, do you have someone at school who will help you no matter what? So feeling like you have someone that, isn't going to judge and can help you. And I think it was about 70-80% of our students do feel.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So that just shows, the great relationships the staff are making.
Again, and let me just defer back to my memory, walking those halls, Joe Benjamin out there. Officer Gray was when I was up at Taconic, Officer Gray was the resource officer. And there were people went to you could see a teacher would have four or five kids around before class. To me, it was inspirational to see that relationship between the teachers and the staff. Bev Gantz, I mean, she's been there since, I don't know, forever. But the kids that she knew, their parents, and in some cases, their grandparents, and had this relationship, it all pays off. I will just tell you all that. Don't ever think you're. I was with the ones who had it real issues, and I will go back, and some of them, they just didn't have the guidance that they should have had, not just in the school system, but everywhere. We're going to take a 1 minute break. To me, this is kind of meat and potatoes of part of today's education, social and emotional development. And I have with me Bethany Nichols, and she's really heading up and trying to bring it all together. We're going to talk a little bit more about COVID when we came back, basically the reentry, because what I've read and what I've heard from teachers and others, the reentry process for some was like a brand new beginning, like they never remember a lot of what they learned in the past. Before you criticize, educate yourself. That's all I'm going to say. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. We are simulcasting on PCTV. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. Much more to find out about social emotional learning and all that that means. And through the week, we're going to be addressing different things, pathways, cultural differences. There's just a lot that I don't think people fully grasp of the total educational endeavor, picture, efforts, all those words. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon here on WTBR FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
And now back to the Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, everybody, we're back. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. We're here today. I just can't tell you, this is Bethany Nichols. She's a social and emotional person for the Pittsfield Public School Systems. Now, we didn't have those when we were in school. I'm not sure we didn't need them, but they didn't see a reason for it. In today's day and age, now we're going to talk post-COVID now and all the challenges of bringing the kids back. I've read a lot about it. Bethany is has been wonderful in explaining what they do. And now we'll get a little specificity, especially for the kids whose first time in a brick-and-mortar building was in kindergarten. So when the school opened, how did you guys do that? Was there a thought process behind? I'm sure there was, but how did it happen? How did it transpire?
Yeah, so there was a lot of planning prior to that. At this point, I was the school psychologist at Pittsfield High School.
Oh, wow.
We opened back up post-COVID. And it was a lot of adapting, and school psychologists do a lot of special education testing. I had a tent in a courtyard where students came in, where we did our special education testing, which would have been unheard of 2 years before that. But I had a pop-up sports tent with a table underneath. Wow. And we adapted, and the kids came. And there was a lot of worry about wearing masks and how were we going to teach the students to wear the masks, how to use the masks, how to respond if someone wouldn't wear a mask, where that anxiety came from. Right. And I remember coming in and the kids, they just knew, they just wore the masks. I remember thinking, you know, it was going to be like really something we would have to work on with them. And I personally don't remember a lot of issues. I know my daughter at that point was in preschool, and I would see she and all of her 3 and 4 year old friends walking right into the Boys and Girls Club wearing their little masks. And I'm sure there were concerns, but it's almost like there was a really clear expectation set of like, this is something we have to do, and everyone was doing it and they did it.
Well, that is almost indoctrination, I would say, rather than education. But when they came back, some of them, again, their experience in school was Zoom. Mm-hmm. And now their experience is a classroom with other kiddos.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely had to readjust some of the expectations. A personal anecdote, I know my son was used to being on the computer with the mute button on while his teacher was teaching, and he would just talk because no one could hear him. And right. Then I got a phone call when he got back. He was talking out in class. And I think it took him a little bit to rein it back in and realizing that he couldn't just speak when he wanted to, because there was no, you know, mute button.
Right.
So it was, you know, I think small things like that, that, you know, collectively, you know, require a lot of, you know, kind of going back to basics and, you know, and
interventions
also
like
coming to school. I know attendance is a very hot topic for us, and getting students to, you know, get back into that routine and come back. And I'd say, you know, we definitely do see a lot more concern with chronic attendance issues, and getting students to, you know, come in. There's a lot of focus on supporting those students. And some of that is, you know, getting out of that routine of coming to school, and then also the anxiety of coming back from being away so long. That was definitely a component.
Yeah, and don't you think, too, that a lot of the disciplines and acceptable protocols and all the things that kids learned, so many of them were lost during COVID and had to be reintroduced, reinforced. And that's from what I'm reading. And just an FYI, an aside, it's not just Pittsfield who's having, what do you call it? Return to school vacancy. Is it? No, not vacancy. Attendance. There it is. Hey, you know, sooner or later, you realize what you're dealing with here, and you'll probably hang up, but that don't do that. Attendance issues. I'm doing some research for something else, and it's a nationwide problem. Attendance in some places is abysmal. And it's, and some of it is socioeconomic. And all I would say is, if you're a person out there, a grandparent, a parent, a friend, an aunt, an uncle, and your person isn't going back to school regularly, attending school, get on it. Because the numbers of, I can't pull it off the top of my head because, well, it's like my brain has no hair either. But it's... if you miss 10 days, there's a formula that really is, and I don't want to put you on a spot, but if you miss 10 consecutive days, you've really hurt yourself academically.
Right. It's 10 consecutive, or it's also, you know, one day a week adds, it adds up.
Yeah.
And even when it doesn't seem like a lot, you know, it's one day every 2 weeks, which is 2 days a month, which 10 months is 20 days, which is 4 weeks of school. It's a lot. I think it's easy to not realize how quickly that's adding up. And I know in a lot of our discussions, particularly in our school committee rotations and things like that, has been around the half days and the struggle that we have with attendance on the half days as well. And, you know, really pushing the importance of, you know, you can do some school in the shorter amount of time. But I know the district has really been looking at, you know, what is the most effective thing for our students. And, you know, in this, you know, post-COVID, is what we've always done, is that still what's working? So I appreciate the thought of, you know, do we need to change things and look at, you know, how are our structures working for families now? And is that, you know, the way to keep
sure.
going?
Yeah, because, I know exactly where you're coming. I don't have a life, so I watch the school committee meetings and some of the subcommittee meetings along with the city council. But I watched a debate, and I thought it was very well done. The debate, the deliberation, and the conclusion of what day should we do Wednesday, should we do Fridays. We reached out to the kids. We've reached out to the parents. We've reached out to the teachers. The way, and I will say this, and you're included in this, Bethany, you really, the way the system makes a decision, I'm very impressed with. And I've been all over the world. So, and from governments and companies and groups, government, the way that you guys make a decision, it's going back probably three or four superintendents, data-driven, not just knee-jerk. Wow, the kids didn't like coming on Friday or Wednesday or whatever. Well, that's, if you were going to go, who's running the show here? But you made an important point too. What is the, and I believe there's some data, and I'm not going to put, but those half days learning can be done, but it's up to the parents or the guardians or whomever to get the kid on the bus or get the kid in the building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And and some of it, I think, is there's, a piece of, the importance of education. And then some of it is it's hard for childcare. It's hard to make sure that, there's someone to get your student off the bus. If they, I think some families, what happens is you can drop them with the grandparent at, 7:30 in the morning, but you can't leave at midday to bring them. So they end up staying, with the grandparent all day or things like that. I think it's, I think families are under a lot of stress work-wise too. There's, people are very busy. They have a lot going on. There's definitely the families have to balance sometimes getting the students to school. I know a lot of our schools have worked on having incentives for the students planning fun cultural activities or arts activities on the half days to get the students wanting to come to school. And so if there's anyone who's sort of pushing back against their parents, they get to get, pull those students in. I know certainly if my kids are begging to, go to an after school activity or an evening thing at school, I am much more likely to go if they are really on me to asking to go. So I think schools are thinking outside of the box too, in terms of the attendance on the half days and the things that they are, planning and doing and encouraging the students to come.
And today, you hit it. So many of our teachers, and I think the public doesn't always acknowledge this, understand this, or appreciate this. They have kids, and they have kids in the school, and they have the same issues with half days and full days and no days and whatever days, and all the other issues. Social, emotional, sped, pathway, the parents have, non-teacher parents. And I hope that's coming across here, that if you can't read this lady's commitment to her profession and her kiddos, then I don't know if we can help you at all. I'm just saying, Bethany, you come across very concerned, very involved, not only as an administrator, but as your background but as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the number one thing, that if the parents buy into it, then the kids will follow. And that's why I work hard to convince parents about how important it is to buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been around a while, not in this position, but in Anne Marie Carpenter. Now, let me just tell you about Anne Marie Carpenter. I think she hung the moon. And you're right there with her. Transforming school culture. What have you seen through your years of experience about school cultures?
Yeah, I think a lot of it boils down to that sense of belonging and sense of community, and being welcoming and having students feel like you want them to be there, you're excited for them, you're welcoming them. And that, we do that through, we talked about getting to know students and knowing who they are, what they're doing. And it also, I think it ties back a lot to those PBIS practices as well. If you have, a well-structured classroom, it's set up for the students. They know what to expect. They come in and their name is on their desk, and the schools do so much planning beforehand to make sure that sort of everything is all set and ready, and there's a structure and a routine. It's not as explicitly stated to the students, but it creates that feeling of, everyone is prepared for me. I'm here, I'm coming. So I think, pulling in that piece of knowing the students and then also really setting up structured routines and clear expectations for the kids.
And when we go back and we look at the evolution of, even when I was in school and the courses and in the delivery of the courses, I mean, I'm a lot older than you are, trust me. But I can remember going in a wonderful teacher, Mr. Lyons, his name was, at North Junior High, now Reed. In Algebra 1, and you want to talk about Greek. It was Greek to me. But one thing about him it was he made everybody feel welcome. He never embarrassed anybody who didn't have the right answer. So, I mean, that to me is part of the whole social emotional learning environment was, and teachers practice this every day. I can't say that about every teacher I had, but Mr. Lyons sticks out as someone, and it was a difficult topic, algebra, I just can't say so how now here's another question off topic a little bit. How about wellness for the teachers through this social emotional? I mean, it's not the job it used to be. I would say it's a very challenging job today, teachers. But that's just me. I'm not a teacher.
Yeah, there are a lot of expectations on teachers, and I think that a lot of it stems from wanting to do the best for the students, and making sure that we're doing all of the requirements. But it's there are a lot of demands, and I think as we're talking about this mental health impact of the pandemic and COVID and things like that, that's, teachers and staff are not immune from that. So it's, I think everybody, people are coming with a different baseline on things. I think, in my role in trying to be as supportive as possible, I think sometimes people, they just, need to be heard. I've been in meetings too, where, people just, they just need to share sort of what's going on, what
Great.
experiences, have that validated, have someone else say, yeah, I see that too. Obviously it's best when there's some strategies shared or, support that, they can give
Right,
each other.
right, right.
But really, just acknowledging that, yes, this is hard sometimes, can go a long way.
In this project I'm working on, I have spent probably an inordinate amount of time going back on the and you said it, listening. When I was active in a youthful offender program, I'll never forget a kid who was kind of a rough kid. We'll leave it at that. He in his own complimentary way, said to me, "You're the only person I've ever talked to that really listened to me. Everybody else is telling me what I did wrong halfway through what I was trying to tell them, why I did it." And that resonated with me. And I spend a lot of time listening, especially when I was working with them, because as you know, pre talking to you is like talking to a colleague. A lot of these kids have a veneer, and that veneer has been built as a method of survival, because of incidences outside of the school, perhaps, and may perhaps some bullying in the school. What is the, and we only got a couple minutes left. I'm sorry, we babbled on. I babbled on. What is the status with bullying? I know the Pittsfield school system doesn't tolerate it, but what's your observation?
We definitely have a strict protocol in responding to bullying. I think we are in a time where bullying can look like many different things, whether that's verbal, physical, social media, online. I mean, that's huge for kids. It's definitely, I mean, I'm not going to say it's not there. No. I would say that, you know, the staff are trained to, you know, respond promptly. I feel like we have more tools to respond. And there's definitely an awareness of for students on how to report that. So when we do, you know, bullying components of our social emotional learning curriculum, it's not only, you know, how to respond to bullying, but how to be a bystander to bullying as well. So if you see someone else being a bully, or being bullied, they, you know, it teaches them how to respond. And in our trainings as well, it teaches kids, you know, how to, you know, if they are being bullied, what to do, but also how not to bully. It sort of recognizes both sides of that equation, and how to, you know, form friendships and navigate disagreements without, you know, sort of taking it to that next piece.
Well, I can tell you that I applaud you for everything you're doing. It's not an easy road to hoe every day. Every day they're just like with all of us, every day there's new challenges and new demands on time. And when I just really think that when, as I see kiddos going into school, I live close to Herberg, and I see them walking to school. And, you know, the book bags seem to get larger, or the backpacks, I guess, with books. I guess they're carrying books and computers and all. One last thing. How is the phone, cell phone situation going down?
I think it depends on who you ask. when we have surveyed the staff, they do say they see positive changes in students. When you survey the students, they don't always necessarily recognize. I think students would like to feel like they have more agency over their cell phone use. But we're definitely, you know, it's still a learning experience on how to navigate. And there's definitely a tension between, you know, completely taking cell phones away and teaching responsible cell phone use. And I think that's something we're still balancing between, because when the students are not at school, if they're at their job or they go on to college, like there's not going to be someone, you know, taking their cell phone. So it's a balance between, you know, really working with what we have now, and then also teaching responsible use. And I didn't want to leave without just mentioning the support that we have from our community resources is amazing. I am frequently in contact with 18 Degrees and the Breen Center and the Berkshire Regional Housing Authority. People come in, our community wants to help. They want to provide mentoring. They want to provide connections and resources for our families. So I am so grateful for that wraparound service that Pittsfield has. There are truly some amazing community agencies that are supporting us as well.
And going back perhaps to Dr. Eberwine, Dr. McCandless, and Mr. Curtis, from my perspective, this is a transparent school district. The doors are open. The windows are open. The people are there. They're open to criticism if it's justified. They're from other places I've lived and been where they're, what goes on in the school is the school's business. Well, and that I don't believe is the philosophy of the Pittsfield school system. Bethany just brought it out, where it's a community involvement. And that to me is wholesome and rewarding. And we should be thankful for the system that we have in this system, in this school district. Bethany, you've been a tremendous guest. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful summer vacation and come back ready to head. Well, I do want to say before I go, if you just give 1 minute, please. On Wednesday, that's tomorrow, May 15th, their launch of a memory cafe in the Berkshires will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. in the boardroom of the Fryo Center. That's on North Street for you older people, the old Capitol. So you won't miss it. It's a big marquee. It says Capitol. You can go in. A memory cafe is a casual social group for caregivers of people with mild cognitive impairment or memory loss. Join new friends. They play games. They'll enjoy music and dance, and they'll have light refreshments. The memory cafe will meet every third Wednesday of the month from May on. And I know it doesn't really blend in with the school system, but I will tell you there's a lot of folks really in need of help. Bethany, again, thank you, my listeners. Boy, got an alligator in my throat. I will say this as I always do. God bless. And today, do something for somebody else. Reach out. Be a light in their darkness, perhaps. Thanks a million. Good luck. And if ever I can, Bethany, anytime you want to get anything announced or whatever, just get a hold of me.
Sure, thank you. I appreciate that.
You bet. Good luck.
It's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.